It is shocking to realize how quickly time passes. It is only minutes ago that I was standing here launching the first of our Friday lectures of this term. And it was Professor Malcolm Shaw who was talking, and he was talking about territory in international law. And he gave us a fabulous review of all the issues that can conceivably arise in relation to territorial disputes. The Falklands Malvinas case is one of those which, in one single set of circumstances, leads us to consider literally, and I checked, every individual item that he went through in his hour-long presentation of just listing, basically, issues that one could look at in terms of international law and territory. We have the issue of discovery. Four states or more, you will correct me, claiming that they first saw the Falkland Malvinas Islands and attaching legal significance to that. The issue of occupation. You have the British and the French occupying different parts of the islands more or less at the same time and running into one another sort of accidentally and discovering that presences had been established. We have cession or transfer of title, France passing claim to Spain, of course, for a fee. Like the Bible tells us 600,000 livres, which sounds like a lot in those days. The issue of dereliction, giving up title. If you leave a territory but leave a plaque behind which says, I don't really need to leave, what is the legal relevance of that? Something which at different times both sides did in relation to the Falkland Malvinas Islands. Forced eviction. Both sides, again, at some point, being evicted from their possession of the islands. What does it mean? We have here in the room the world's leading expert on adverse possession in international law. What does it mean if the one side exercises occupation, the peaceful, continuous display of state authority, but the other side continuously protests? Does that render it no longer peaceful display of state authority in the sense of the Island of Palmas case? And looking at all of this set of rules on territory, the question arises, is that relevant at all? Or are we instead discussing a kind of case to which a different legal regime applies, a legal regime that in a way is more powerful and displaces other considerations, the regime of self-determination issues? And the question of, did Argentina ever complete its identity of an uti possidetis self-determination entity? But in order to answer that question, again, we have to know what was the uti possidetis boundary that it might have inherited, leading us back to these first questions. But even if that were to be the case, what are the rights and interests of the actual Falklanders on the island? Are we really discussing territory? Or shouldn't we also be mindful of the interests of local populations that for a considerable time have lived in a certain territory? So we have a case here that raises virtually all the issues that could ever conceivably arise in the context of a discussion of territory. And therefore, I think we can be particularly grateful to have Marcello here to help us discuss this case. It is a case that is legally interesting, but also one that is tragic. 900 lives were lost in the armed conflict involving the Falkland Malvinas Islands of 1982. And I remember that time, ancient as I am, and I recall that everybody at the time was saying, well, now that this has happened, now that there has been a use of force, for 20 years the issue of the Falkland Malvinas can no longer be touched, can no longer be discussed. And I was shocked to learn, partially because Marcello raised the issue, that it's not been 20 years by now, it's 30 years that have passed. And again, I think Marcello will help us to understand more what discussions there could be on the tricky and difficult issue in relation to the Falkland Malvinas, because not only will he address the issue of the territorial dispute, but also, I think, dispute settlement features in the title of your talk. As I already mentioned, Marcello is a distinguished expert, not only in international law generally, but in particular on the issues of territory. He has written a classic book on adverse possession in international law, and I think Yusufiya says 100 other major works in international law. He is professor at the Graduate Institute in Geneva, active as counsel in a number of important cases in the International Court of Justice, an associé of the Institute, and I was surprised, but of course also delighted to learn, Director General of the Latin American Society of International Law. Speaking of anniversaries, 30 years, Falkland Marinas conflict, it is 10 years ago that we were together, you reminded me, Directors of Studies at the Hague Academy over the summer in 2002. Now, this is part of our part-time, of our regular, I'm sorry, lunchtime talk series. The talks are addressed principally at our students. It is an academic discussion. Nevertheless, I'm pleased to welcome here today Ambassador Castro of the Argentinian Embassy in London. And we had a surprise visitor, one of us, one of our own, Sir Christopher Greenwood of the International Court of Justice. You are very welcome, and I'm pleased that you are here today. Generally speaking, as I say, it's an academic event, it's not a diplomatic one. And I'm that Marcello will focus his comments as an academic in relation to this issue. Thank you so much, and welcome, Marcello.
Thank you very much, Mark, for your kind introduction. I think you raised all the relevant issues concerning the dispute between Argentina and the United Kingdom in relation to the Falkland Islands Malvinas. I would like to say at the outset that I feel at home here. It's a very pleasure to be at this center once again, for different reasons. I come quite frequently, and it's always a real pleasure, particularly to be here in this room. As Mark mentioned, I will give an academic talk. I'm here in my personal capacity, and I have to say at the very beginning that I am an Argentine citizen. This is just for your information. But I have to say that my positions are based on my perception of international law and not necessarily on my nationality. As a matter of course, I will not expose here the position of Argentina, so what I will say is just my views on the dispute. As Mark mentioned, this is the 30th anniversary of the armed conflict of 1982, and next year will also mark the 180th anniversary of what is considered in Argentina as the expulsion of Argentina by the United Kingdom, and from the British side as the 180 years of the British administration of the islands. I'm aware that to speak about this dispute here is very sensitive, but I think it is important to address the issue from an international law perspective, because international law is our common language. And it is also the way to understand the different positions each side can have on this particular dispute, which has become a locus classicus in the field of territorial disputes. As you probably know, the dispute concerning sovereignty between Argentina and the United Kingdom not only concerns the Falklands Malvinas, but also South Georgia and South Sandwich Islands. It is not my intention to address all these issues, because we will need probably more than one afternoon even, I will particularly focus on the Falklands Malvinas. I think there is no need to show you where the islands are located. You know it very well. We are talking about a group of islands of about 12,000 square kilometers, which are located nearly 480 kilometers from the South American mainland. Its current population, according to the last census, is 2,932 inhabitants, plus about 1,000 military staff in the Mount Pleasant military base. So you're also familiar with the Islas Malvinas, or if you prefer, with the Falkland Islands. As you see, these are the same islands. This is the reason why we have a dispute. My idea today is to address three particular points. Of course, I will have to make an overview of these three different points. It would be impossible to address all of them in depth. First of all, I will briefly address the different titles of sovereignty invoked by both sides. Then I will examine the situation with regard to the process of decolonization in the United Nations, and I will refer to two important principles of international law, which are the principle of the respect of territorial integrity and the principle of self-determination. And finally, I will try to examine the current situation with regard to the negotiations or the lack of negotiations concerning the core of the dispute, or the different points that the parties raise with regard to the dispute in the framework of the principle of the peaceful settlement of disputes. So, let me start with the titles of sovereignty that each side invokes. I will briefly examine the Argentine position first and the British position later on. As Mark just mentioned, Argentina's position is essentially focused on state succession. So Argentina considers that it inherited the islands from Spain. No matter whether the question is perceived as a matter of state succession or by the application of the principle of iuti possidetis iuris, the situation would be the same. So if Spain was the sovereign of the Falklands Malvinas, then by becoming independent, Argentina succeeded in this sovereignty. So the question is, of course, in order to be successor, Spain should have had a territorial sovereignty over the islands. So in this case, you have to examine which were the titles invoked by Spain in order to sustain territorial sovereignty. The question of the discovery, Mark just mentioned, there are at least four, I wouldn't say states, but at least sailors, we can say, from four different states, claiming to having discovered the islands. I think this is not a main point of concern with regard to the current status of sovereignty, because as you well know, sovereignty today cannot be exclusively granted on the basis of discovery. The celebrated Max Huber arbitral award on the Palmas Island case, the references of the idea of an inchoate title that should have been performed in order to acquire sovereignty is applicable here. So I will not address the matter whether it was a Spaniard who discovered the islands, or it was a British or a Dutch or a French. The question, in my view, is not essential. The main point Spain involved with regard to sovereignty was the fact that the rest of the European powers recognized that the islands were located in an area which was considered by Spain as Spanish, and it was recognized by the other powers, particularly France, but also the United Kingdom. The first possession of the islands was French, as it was mentioned just a moment ago. Since Spain protested against this possession by France, France ceded the settlement, and Spain could invoke the first of these, the case of this first possession by France. The presence of Spain in the islands was continuous since that time, I'm speaking about 1764, until 1811. So the process of independence in Argentina started in 1810, and it was in the framework of the struggle against the independent movement that the Spanish government withdrew its settlement from the Malvinas Falkland in 1811. So, first possession and continuous possession since 1764 till 1811. So the process of independence started in South America in 1810, and this is the reason why in South America it is spoken about the Uti Possidetis Iuris of 1810. During that period, there were acts of state authority by Argentina. Since the very moment of the beginning of the process of independence, there were administrative acts, and there was a taking of possession of the islands in 1820. After this taking of possession, there were more than administrative acts, there were concessions, and people coming from Argentina were settled in the islands. In 1829, a governor was appointed from Buenos Aires, and there was the first British protest against this appointment. For Argentina, the taking over the islands in 1833 was an illegal act, and since then Argentina has never consented to the British occupation of the islands. So this is, in a nutshell, the position of Argentina with regard to sovereignty. What is the British position with regard to sovereignty? As I said, Britain also claimed discovery, but what I said with regard to Spain is also applicable to the British position. I will not discuss discovery here. The second argument by the United Kingdom is the taking of possession of 1765. Maybe I have to show in a map. So, Britain established a garrison here in Sanders Island, Fort Egmont. The French, then Spanish settlement was here in Port-Louis, or Puerto Soledad. And as most of you know, there was an incident when the Spaniards discovered that there was a British presence in East Falkland, in Sounder Islands, Island, and the Spaniards expelled by force the British garrison there. Then there was a dispute, and this dispute was settled And this is interesting because there is at least one agreement in which, in the whole history of the dispute, in which a reference to sovereignty is included. And this was the British-Spanish Agreement of 1771. The two kingdoms were in a situation close to war because of this that could be perceived as a minor incident in the South Atlantic. And in order to avoid this incident to become greater, there was a kind of quiproquo. So the Spanish government restored the British in their possession of Port Edmund, but reserving its rights of sovereignty over the entire Falkland Islands, Malvinas. You have here the text of the agreement, the essential parts, the Spanish declaration, by which it is mentioned that this the fact of restoring the possession of the Fort Edmund in no way affect the question of the prior right of sovereignty, and the British declaration, which considered this as a satisfaction for the injury done. There are different interpretations about this agreement. For some, this is an exclusive reference to Spanish sovereignty. For some other, this reservation of rights, of prior rights, is applicable to both parties. I will not discuss this issue here, but I would like to mention what the celebrated Dr. Johnson said about this transaction between the Spanish and the British government. To have inquired whether our settlement at Port Edmund was any violation of the Spanish rights had been to enter upon a discussion which the pertinacity of political disputants may have continued without end. And probably these words are still applicable. We therefore called for restitution, not as a concession of right, but as a reparation of honor. So that was the situation in 1771. Once the British possession was restored in Port Edmund, the British abandoned this island in 1774. But the British possession is that this abandonment was without the intention to abandon the sovereignty, and then this is the famous plate indicated that these port and islands belong to His Majesty. So the fact is that after the abandonment, whatever the legal implications of this fact has, the Spanish government continued in possession of the whole archipelago. Even more, they went to Port Egmont and destroyed the fort and took the plate. And since then, Spain continued in possession of the islands until 1811. And when the Spanish abandoned the islands, they also left the plate. So, what is the legal weight of this kind of plates? That's interesting, but I call your attention on the fact that if you interpret one plate in one way, you have to apply the same interpretation to the other. I leave it for you, the interpretation you wish to give to these plates. But I have to say some words,
probably.
So, in my view, what is essential is what happened after these abandonments, both, and the effect of this plate is cannot be understood without examining the conduct of the parties after this, after that. The fact is that once the British abandoned Port Egmont, There was no protest at all. The fact that the presence of the Spanish in the islands until 1811 did not raise any kind of protest. There was no protest because of the destruction of the fort, etc., and not even any further claim. The third argument invoked by the United Kingdom is the fact of having been in administration of the islands since 1833 and a titre de souverain. And here the question is, what is the role of time in the acquisition of territorial sovereignty? Is it the fact that next year will mark 150 years, the fact that nearly two centuries have passed, is this fact having any implication? My position is, and I would like to remember what Grotius wrote in the Jure Belli ac Pacis, that nothing is done by the time. Everything passes through time. So what is essential is not just the fact that nearly two centuries have passed. What is essential is to see what were the attitudes, what was the conduct of the parties during these two centuries. So the fourth British argument is that Argentina renounced to its claim. There were some periods in which Argentina did not protest. I have to say that protests started from the very beginning of the expulsion of the Argentine authorities from the islands in January 1833. But there were two periods in which, of about 30 years, in which there were no protests. Very recently, the British government had invoked a new argument, the fact that there was a treaty in 1850 by which Argentina purportedly renounced to its claim. But this treaty has no relation, in my view, has no relation at all with the question of the Falklands Malvinas. It was a treaty which put an end a dispute concerning the blockade of the Rio de la Plata, River Plate, if you prefer. This treaty put an end this particular conflict. The fact that the preamble said that, well, now perfect relations are restored between the two states, in my view, this does not imply that Argentina has abandoned its claim over the Falklands Malvinas. Moreover, just 1 year before, the matter was discussed in the British Parliament, and the Argentine minister in London remembered that Argentina has protested, and the fact that the British government is not willing to discuss the issue, because that was the permanent reaction of the British government when Argentina tried to settle the dispute through negotiations. The fact that the British government is not willing to discuss the issue does not imply that Argentina has relinquished its claim. Moreover, I think it is interesting to remember what the International Court of Justice mentioned in the Pedra Branca Pulau Batu Putih case between Malaysia and Singapore in 2008. Here you have the quotation. I would just say that in order to consider that there is an abandonment of territorial sovereignty, the conduct of the parties must be absolutely clear, because we are talking about abandonment of sovereignty, and you cannot conceive that the state abandoned its sovereignty just by simple and isolated facts. There must be a common pattern of conduct, and there must be also a clear manifestation of this intention to abandon territorial sovereignty. So, the last argument invoked by the British government is self-determination. Since the current population of the islands wishes to remain British, then it is the will of the inhabitants of the islands, according to the principle of self-determination of peoples, that must be respected. This point allows me to go to the second part of this talk, which is the implications of the process of decolonization with regard to the dispute. You know the importance of the role of the United Nations in the decolonization process, the fact that the Charter of the United Nations mentions self-determination as one of the fundamental principles, the fact that Resolution 2625 of the General Assembly, which interpreted the fundamental principles of international law enshrined in the Charter, also leave self-determination a very, very important place in contemporary international law. And we have to examine the practice of the United Nations in this process of decolonization. There is no doubt that self-determination is a fundamental principle of international law. The question is, who is the holder of the right to self-determination? And this is where problems arise, because the position of the British government is that self-determination is applicable to the current population of the islands, and the position of Argentina is that it is not. Before addressing this issue, let me remember you the role of the General Assembly in the process of decolonization. You know that there is a chapter in the UN Charter, Chapter 11, containing a declaration with regard to non-self-governing territories, and in the practice of the United Nations, it is for the General Assembly to determine which territory falls within this category of non-self-governing territory, and it is also the role of the General Assembly to determine the way this territory must be decolonized. And in this regard, any constitutional determination ascertainment made by the colonial power does not necessarily link the General Assembly in its action. You may remember that during the 50s or the 60s, and half of the 70s, the Portuguese government did not accept that its colonies were non-self-governing territories. According to the Portuguese government at that time, these were just overseas provinces, as Portuguese as Lisbon or Porto. That was the position of the Portuguese government, and the General Assembly denied this self-definition, and it declared that it was for the General Assembly to determine which territory is non-self-governing territory or not. So I mentioned that the main problem is the determination of the holder of the right to self-determination. And you can say that all peoples have the right to self-determination. But the question is, who are the people? And I will propose you a first approach to this issue, which is to notice that not any human community is considered to be a people in the sense of international law. We are not talking about sociology here, we are talking about international law. And this was even reflected in the advisory opinion by the ICJ in the Western Sahara case in 1975, in which the International Court of Justice examined the fact that in some circumstances the General Assembly decided that the population of a non-self-governing territory should not be consulted. And the court explained this in the following way, I quote, "Those instances were based either on the consideration that a certain population did not constitute a people entitled to self-determination, or on the conviction that the consultation was totally unnecessary in view of special circumstances." So that is to say, not any population constitutes a people. I know that I'm not going too far with that, because who determines where we have in the presence of the people, if you have a human community? But in international law, there are different collective rights. There is the rights of peoples, but there is also the rights of national, or ethnic, or other minorities, and there is also the rights of indigenous peoples. And these are three different categories. Even if the General Assembly has recognized that self-determination is applicable to indigenous peoples, you notice in the UN Declaration on Indigenous Peoples that this application of self-determination is limited, and I would say very limited, because it must be exercised within the framework of existing states. That is to say, in other words, you have peoples entitled to self-determination, you have indigenous peoples entitled to internal self-determination, and you have national, ethnic, or other minorities which have important civil, political, cultural, economic rights, but not that of self-determination. So the question here is whether the principle of self-determination is or not applicable to the population of the Falklands Malvinas. In this regard, I think we have to examine the position of the General Assembly with regard to the specific situation of the Falklands Malvinas. The first resolution adopted by the General Assembly with regard to the question of the Falkland Islands Malvinas was Resolution 2065 of 1965, in which the resolution focused on two points: negotiations concerning sovereignty between Argentina and the United Kingdom, and the interest of the population of the islands. Argentina voted in favor of this resolution and the United Kingdom abstained. The reason for this abstention was precisely that the British government was willing to mention the wishes of the population, and the Argentine position was the interest of the population but not the wishes. And this was finally that was adopted by the General Assembly in its first resolution. The same can be said about all the following resolutions of the General Assembly with regard to the Falklands Malvinas. And I would like to compare the position taken by the General Assembly with regard to the Falklands Malvinas with that of other colonial situations. For instance, the situation of East Timor. In the resolutions of the General Assembly, in which the principle of self-determination is considered to be applicable, there is a clear reference to the right of people to self-determination, and particularly, if you have a look at this resolution 3485 with regard to East Timor, an express recognition of the right to self-determination to the people. The people, in this case, of Portuguese, as it then was, Timor. So there is a clear contrast between the resolutions of the General Assembly in which the principle of self-determination is recognized and the situation of the Falklands Malvinas. Can we consider the inhabitants of the Falklands Malvinas as a people? In the sense of international law, I insist, we are, I suppose, most of us, lawyers or judges, and we are. What I'm inviting you here is to make a legal analysis of the right of peoples to self-determination. So no matter what your idea about people in another sense is. The General Assembly has not recognized the applicability of self-determination to the islanders. And one can analyze the reasons why. Some resolutions related to the islands expressly mention the fact that this is a special colonial situation. And which is the special situation with regard to the islands in the framework of decolonization? First, I would say the United Kingdom occupied the islands and expelled another state from the islands. This is the first element. The second element is that it didn't accept to solve the dispute through negotiations or through other means. Argentina proposed the arbitration of the disputes in the 19th century, but this was not followed by any kind of arbitral proceedings. The third element is that these are islands, and by definition, islands are isolated territory. In the case of the islands, there was no original population. So the islands, when the French established first, were not a populated area. The United Kingdom expelled Argentina from the islands. There is a discussion about whether the British expelled the whole Argentine population of just Argentine authorities and the garrison. I don't think this is a crucial issue. The fact is that there was a settlement in the islands when the British came. The British expelled this the authority exercising sovereignty there, and since then it sent its population and control the migratory policies with regard to the islands. So, in this way, the colonial power decided the human composition of this territory. Another element is the fact that there is this population doesn't have a natural growth. So, if you have a look at the figures of the population of the islands, so you will see that in 1851, for instance, there were 280 inhabitants. In 1911, 2,300. In 1980, 1,800. And today, according to the last census, nearly 2,900 inhabitants. There is no natural growth. And the population, the situation of the population, largely depends on the economic situation in the islands. Another argument Argentina invokes is that Argentine citizens have been discriminated. It is not easy, although there are 29 Argentines living in the islands at present. It is not easy, to say the least, for an Argentine to establish in the islands. I have to remember even that for nearly 17 years, Argentine holders of Argentine passports were denied access to the islands just because of their nationality. A further element with regard to self-determination is the way the composition of the electoral list is established. As you probably know, there will be a referendum next year, and if you have a look at the relevant legislation concerning what is called Falkland Island status, there is a clear privilege for British citizens or British overseas territories citizens in a situation in which even someone from Cambridge, so to say, if he or she goes to the islands and settle there, after some years it can he or she can have a Falkland Island status. This is not the same situation with regard to citizens from other countries, which needs to follow a different procedure. So, if you take all these elements into account, one can understand the position taken at the United Nations level that there is not a population in the Falklands Malvinas that can be considered as a people entitled to self-determination. And probably this is the reason why Sir Anthony Parsons in 1982, before the Security Council, he said, I don't know whether this was a lapsus or not, but he said the British people of the islands had lived peacefully in British territory for a century and a half. So, if the inhabitants are British, they are not a different people. I know that at present there is an effort, I would say, by the islanders to present themselves as having a national identity, but up till now this effort has not been recognized by the majority of states, particularly, as you know, by the states of the region which recognize Argentine sovereignty. So, I have to go a little bit quickly. You have in front of you all the United Nations resolutions with regard to the Falklands Malvinas. You will find this list in the internet, of course, if you wish. General Assembly resolutions, Decolonization Committee resolutions, and Security Council resolutions. The Decolonization Committee, in its last resolution, insists on the fact that the interest of the population must be taken into consideration, but there is a particular colonial situation in the islands, and the way to put an end to this special and particular colonial situation is the peaceful and negotiated settlement of the dispute over sovereignty between the governments of Argentina and the United Kingdom. So let me allow to go to the third and last part of this talk, waiting for your comments and questions, because I strongly believe that this will be the most interesting part of this Friday talk. The question with regard to negotiations or the lack of negotiations. You know that the Charter of the United Nations contains two fundamental principles. One is the prohibition of the use or the threat of use of force in international relations, and also the peaceful settlement of international disputes. These are two different fundamental principles of international law. In 1982, Argentina legally attempted to solve the dispute through the use of force, no matter whether its position is right or wrong with regard to the merits of the case. It was a clear illegal use of force in 1982. But what is the situation after the 1982 conflict? As a matter of fact, one cannot claim that the outcome of the armed conflict has a role to play in the merits of the dispute. Neither the United Kingdom nor Argentina claim that the fact of having retaken possession, Argentina in April 1982, or the United Kingdom in June 1982, played a role in the definition or in the settlement of the dispute. So clearly, the fact that there were hostilities between the two states did not put an end in contemporary international law to the dispute. Clearly, there is a dispute, that is quite clear. Nobody can deny, I think, the existence of a dispute between Argentina and the United Kingdom with regard to two questions at least. Who has sovereignty over the islands, and whether the principle of self-determination is or not applicable. These are two legal questions deserving a peaceful settlement. So the question is, the fact that Argentina proposes negotiations and the fact that the United Kingdom states that there will be no negotiations unless the inhabitants of the islands request the British government to negotiate sovereignty, is there a breach of the obligation to settle international disputes through peaceful means? This is my question, and I will give you my answer, of course. As you know, this is an obligation of means, not an obligation of result. There must be best efforts on both sides in order to settle the dispute. Of course, this principle also includes the idea of free choice of means. Argentina is proposing negotiations. There is also a good offices task for the Secretary General of the United Nations, according to some General Assembly resolutions. The position of the Secretary General is that once both sides agree that he will perform these good offices, he will do it. For the time being, there is one side having accepted this idea, and the other side having rejected this idea. The fact that the British government invokes self-determination is not in itself a reason not to try to settle the dispute with Argentina. Because obviously the United Kingdom can firmly consider even that the principle of self-determination is applicable, that this is the British position. And if the other side has a different position, clearly there is a dispute. And you cannot invoke the fact that your position is right and the other position would be wrong in order not to settle the dispute. Clearly, in my view, by the fact of not accepting negotiations as requested by Argentina, but not only by Argentina, but also by the General Assembly resolutions, the Decolonization Committee, and many other bodies or at the regional level, such as the Organization of American States, and many other groups of state, including the group of the 77, which today is composed by 121 states plus China. So you have an overwhelming majority, I would say, of the international community requesting the settlement of this long-standing dispute through negotiations. And you have the British position stating that there will be no negotiations unless the inhabitants request the British government to do so. I think that by not accepting negotiations and by not proposing other means, because it is also up for the British government to propose other means of settlement of the dispute, I think that the British government is in breach of the obligation to settle disputes through peaceful means. I'm just finished, practically. Maybe with these provocative words. I would like to finish remembering something positive, which is the strong links that these two countries had all along their history. Obviously, the United Kingdom is an old nation compared with Argentina, but since the very existence of Argentina as a nation, there were close links between the two countries, or even before the independence, because many of those who fought for independence in Argentina found support here. And the British government was the first European power to recognize Argentine independence and to conclude the Treaty of Friendship, Commerce and Navigation in 1825. There are hundreds of thousands of Argentine citizens having British origin. So there are close ties between the two countries. And I would like just to finish with one British proverb, as far as I know, which is, when there is a will, there is a way. Thank you very much.